You graduated from Illinois, and you studied then for your master's.
I did. I didn't complete it. I just got burned out with school, I think, because I'd been going to school full-time, you might say, not only during the year, but during the summertime, because working those other two jobs, I couldn't take a full load, but I had enough hours to get into graduate school in January of my senior year, so I went into graduate school then. Then I graduated in June of 56, but I just needed to get a job. We'd gotten married in January, and she got pregnant almost immediately, so we got a child coming, and I got her to take care of, and I got to do better than this. So after I'd graduated in 56, a lot of my classmates, those in broadcast and communications, you know, they were going to go to Chicago and get a job as an assistant floor manager for $42.50 a week. I said, that's not for me. So the two guys I mentioned before, Don Lanier, he became a minister and he went to seminary. The other one was Edward Yalowitz. He went to Evansville, Indiana and got into an agency up there and was there a couple of years before he went to Chicago with J. Walter Thompson. And I was not going to go to work for $42.50 a week as an assistant floor manager at WBBM in Chicago. A lot of my friends did, and maybe they did well as a result of that. But I kept thinking, you know, I'd really like to go back to Tulsa. I loved that. I would come back and visit there once or twice a year with my folks. And Alma's never been there, so we'll just go back and see what it's like. We drove down here, and of course, you know, the week I came down here, there was nobody here because the NAB was going on in Chicago. And all the managers and the people responsible, for the most part, for doing the hiring, there was one exception there, went to Chicago, and they weren't there, so I couldn't interview with anybody except a few people who were extremely nice to me. And fortunately, there was one station here that had people that could do the hiring, and that's where I got the job.
And that station was?
KAKC. The new KAKC, as it was described then.
And that was what year and month?
That would have been in April of 1957.
What was your job then at KAKC?
Well, I was hired as a mobile newsman. And I guess I auditioned accidentally for the job because I'd been up there to talk to them, and then I went away, and they asked me to come back, and I talked to them. And they said, we'll give you a call. When are you going to be back in Tulsa? I said, well, I don't know. It sort of depends on whether I get a job, because we had driven down here from Champaign-Urbana, where we were still living. So as I was driving away from the station, which was at that time at 910 South Boston, a 12-story building, as I recall, called the American Airlines Building. And as I was driving away, I went out by a school here just off of the intersection of 15th and Lewis, trying to think what the name of that school was, and it doesn't come to my mind right at this moment. But fire trucks were going crazy. They passed me, they went on, and so I went down to follow the fire trucks to see where they were going, and they were going to the school. So I parked the car away from the school area, got out, walked up there just to see what was happening. Well, somebody had had a problem in the kitchen. It was right about noon, and there was smoke, and of course, then they called the fire department. The fire department showed up. Now, at that time, KAKC, which had been operating on that basis of News Alive at 55 ever since August of 56, that's when they sort of started their new format. They had been operating that way, and so in April of 57, they were chasing any siren that moved. Anything you heard, anything that had a red light on it, they were chasing. And I knew this because that was what they were describing to me as the job I would have as a mobile newsman. So I got out of the car. I went up, found out that there was nothing serious, and yet this is the kind of report that KAKC would put on the air in an instant. So I got back in the car, drove over to a place called the Delman Theater, which is at 15th and Lewis. I think there may have been a drugstore or something right next to it. I know I had access to a phone there, so I went in, picked up the phone, looked up the phone number for KAKC and called it, told them who I was, and the guy that answered the phone remembered talking to me. I said, there's a news story out here if you want it. It's a non-existent fire. Oh, we'll put you on the air. So I did a piece right there, probably 30 seconds of mumbling and scrambling around trying to find the words, but I told them what had happened. The fire trucks were called to this, and I'd gotten the name of the school at that time. I don't remember it now. It's still there. But I called this report in, got back in the car, drove over to my aunt's house where we were staying, and in about 30 minutes, I got a phone call from the state. She said, I want to know if you can come back down. We need to talk to you some more. And I'd just been there. I said, yeah. So I got in the car and drove back down there, and they offered me the job.
What was your salary? Do you remember
well,
that?
Well, it wasn't $42.50 a week. You want to know what it was?
Yes.
$400 a month and a car and a small expense account.
You were in tall cotton, weren't you?
Boy, tell me about it.
What other stations were then popular? And KAKC at that time, was that the top of the list yet?
Yeah, KAKC had been dominant in that market with probably 30 to 40% ever since they went on the air back in August or September with that rock and roll format, the top 50. And most stations around the country that were doing rock and roll were doing top 40, but they elected to do top 50. And I think it served us well to continue that process. The thing about it is when you say you got 30 to 40% of the audience, I mean, you had a big share of the audience yourself when you were on KRMG. It wasn't 30 or 40%, but it was big. And the thing about it is that there were only five or six radio stations in Tulsa at the time, whereas what you were competing against was probably 25 different stations in either this market or one surrounding it. And as a result, it wasn't that big a deal if you had a good signal, which we didn't have, except during the day it was pretty reasonable, but at night it caved into nothing. I mean, really, we couldn't get out of Sand Springs at night, basically, because it was 1,000 watts in the daytime and 500 at night. So as a result, we had this large share of the audience. But the other stations that I was aware of course, when I came to Tulsa, I was looking to get on a big 50,000-watt station, which was KVOO and KRMG. Keith Bretz, who was the program director at KRMG, had told me that if I didn't get a job at KAKC, where he had pointed me to go, as well as some other people had done the same thing, he said if I didn't get a job, he would hire me in June to do a night shift if I wanted to come down. I'll never forget the fact that he gave me that opportunity to make that move in case this other thing didn't pan out. He and I have talked about that many times since then. But nonetheless, the big stations in power-wise were KVOO and KRMG, and I really didn't have a clue about ratings at that time. Ratings meant nothing to me until I'd been at KAKC for a few months, and I found out exactly what ratings were all about. KOME was another station, and another one was KTUL. Then there was one other station, KFMJ, that was owned by Fred Jones Ford, and the FMJ stood for Fred and Mary Jones. Those were the stations, and there was one or two FM stations. I think the station at TU was on the air, KWGS. Skelly had paid for that. And then there was another station that Sonny Gray was involved in some way. I had the studios out on Harvard, but I'm not sure what those call letters were and what they later became. But FM was not a significant factor in any way because, first of all, you couldn't hear it in your car. Second of all, nobody really knew what it was. So it was just a competition among five or six AM radio stations. We were about the weakest station of the bunch.
But you each had your own niche because KVOO would have been country.
No, KVOO was not country until much later. They didn't become country until Jack Cressy took over and made it country. Before that, it was pure network and straight on playing the music of the times, which at that time was whatever music was popular in the late 40s, early 50s.
Joe Stafford,
Sinatra, people like
right,
that.
Right.
No, they were not country until probably well into the 60s.
What was KRMG doing at that time?
KRMG was doing the same thing. Now, they had a top-notch jock named Joe Knight that was on in the afternoons, but he left at about the time that I arrived here and went to Baltimore, and Johnny Chick took over that afternoon show, and he did well.
So they took network news, I suppose. I don't know what they were affiliated with, KRMG. Was Ken Greenwood there then when you
came
to town?
No, he wasn't. No, he was not. Frank Lane was the general manager at that time, and I don't know who was after him. Ken came along probably in the mid-60s, maybe early 60s, something like that.
Okay.